Well, I think it's very important for Russian Film Festival to happen in London. Almost it would be strange if there is no Russian Film Festival in London, because London is first such a cosmopolitan city. Then there are so many Russians also living here, but also because, unfortunately, the current cultural climate has been quite tense between Russia and the West, and it's important to build cultural bridges and to get outside the rhetoric of division.
Filmmaker Dolia Govansky speaking about her latest documentary that recalls the story of Ukraine's revolution. She's one of the people we'll hear from on this globe-trotting edition of The Cinema Show. Also ahead.
He wanted to be this lone, unique, totally uninfluenced artist, and it's up to the art historians now to kind of correct that.
We'll touch down in San Francisco to visit an exhibition celebrating the legendary late artist Bruce Conner. And a little later,
the festival has become a regional summit for cinema in Latin America, a real melting pot of ideas and encounters, which will surely continue to bubble and grow in years to come.
We'll find out why Argentina's most popular beach resort town may also be Latin America's cinematic capital. That's all to come on this World Tour edition of The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Ryland, coming to you from Midori House in London. The late artist Bruce Conner defied and rejected labels, and for good reason. In a career that spanned five decades, he was never limited to the barriers of expectation. He worked in many mediums: collage, drawing, prints, photography, and even film. A self-taught filmmaker, his innovative use of found footage and his skillful editing made him an icon in the worlds of art and pop culture, and even garnered him a reputation for being the father of the music video. Conner's film work is now on display in a retrospective at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art called It's All True. Katie McMurrin went along to take a look.
The first film visitors encounter in the exhibit is Conner's very first one, A Movie, which he made in 1958. Conner put the 12-minute film together from 180 pieces of footage taken from pre-existing documentaries, newsreels, and condensed feature films. The Ottorino Respighi orchestral piece Pines of Rome plays underneath. A Movie shows a series of high-impact scenes seamlessly edited together. Viewers see shots of war, the bomb, surfing, deep-sea exploration, car crashes, and stripteases. They also see the unexpected inner workings of filmmaking. Frames of Conner's name and the film's title pop up seemingly out of order. A frame with the words "the end" shows up near the beginning.
He had this idea that when the Marx Brothers could do Duck Soup, and all of a sudden all these things and all these people appear from nowhere to help them, then why couldn't he do that?
Rudolf Freeling is one of the curators of the Conner retrospective It's All True.
And why couldn't he then insert himself in such a way that he would literally turn around the order so dramatically and so radically that it became very much a perception of making film or perceiving film? But A Movie was very much also just fun, although quite dark humor in a way. But he would just play with our knowledge of, you know, of course we know Western films, of course we know, you know, all those genres that we all know so well. So we would literally watch a film that we thought we would know, although we might not actually know the source.
Being the 1950s, how novel was it for a film to be created that was made just of found footage?
I would say it was completely unheard of.
Conner shot original footage for his second film, Cosmic Ray, from 1961. That footage of a nude woman dancing is spliced with found footage of firecrackers, atomic bomb explosions, and suggestive cartoon clips. It's a highly energetic and sexual visual representation of the Ray Charles song What I Say, which serves as a soundtrack. Come and love you, daddy, all night long, all right now. Hey, hey. The film was an underground hit.
It got him so famous that he felt himself cornered into, just after having made two films, into this box and category, oh, here's the underground filmmaker. And he wasn't an underground filmmaker. He was an artist making these radical films besides his assemblages, besides drawing and all of that. So in order to literally obliterate the memory and the reputation of Cosmic Ray, he did a film called Leader, which was nothing but Leader film for half an hour.
Leader is film that's attached to the head or tail of a film and can include countdown or other technical information.
But Leader was literally meant to simply kick you out of the cinema. You know, who would want to watch for half an hour a film that is just clear film, black film, countdown, etc.? So the public got so furious. The story ended in a moment of a radical gesture in the Berkeley Art Museum where he literally cut the Leader film into bits and pieces and threw it into the audience.
Cosmic Ray and Connor's 1966 film Breakaway, which shows dancer, choreographer, and singer Toni Basil dancing frenetically to her song of the same name, have led some to label Connor the inventor of the music video. But Connor would dispute this.
He sort of said, you would have to take a DNA test to really prove that. No, I don't believe it. He made films, but having said that, he clearly edited films to music. He loved, loved, loved music. Music was in everything he did. And he had a big dream around producing a documentary on the Soulsters, you know, very famous soul group, gospel music group in the US in the 30s and 40s. And that never happened. But he would simply refuse to be categorized in any which way. So if you said, you know, didn't you invent the video clip, he would clearly say, not at all.
Connor would work with his friend composer Terry Riley and also create films for the band Devo and for Brian Eno and David Byrne. But those films never made it onto the fledgling music video network MTV. By the time he died in 2008, Connor had created nearly two dozen films. Today, he's cited as an influence on many artists and filmmakers. His films have even had an impact on pop culture. Here's Connor's friend, Dennis Hopper, speaking at an event at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art several years ago.
In my opinion, Bruce Connor's the most important artist of the 20th century. The way his editing, the way his sensibility, the way he was using his names, the way he was using film as film, it really just, it overwhelmed me. His films influenced me, and the acid trip in Easy Rider, my thinking when I was doing that was thinking about Bruce's films.
Despite the accolades, Freeling says Connor was happy to remain on his own.
He wanted to be this lone, unique, totally uninfluenced artist, and it's up to the art historians now to kind of correct that in a way. But he was also unique in many ways. And he had his friends. He was part of the beatniks in the 50s. He was part, as I mentioned earlier, he was part of the hippie movement. But then he always kept his distance and kept his really individual career.
The Bruce Connor retrospective, It's All True, is on display at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art through January 22nd. For Monocle in San Francisco, I'm Katie McMurrin.
Thank you, Katie. Now, how much are you impacted by national borders? Your answer will likely depend upon where you happened to have been born. When Czech filmmaker Petr Vaclav's latest film screened at the Berlin Film Festival in 2016, audiences were still somewhat unaware of just how much walls and borders would come to define the year in international politics. We Are Never Alone was named the best film of the festival's forum program, taking its cues from barriers constructed in various forms. Vaclav's bleak drama depicts characters wandering a small Czech town surrounded by a forest and divided by a road. I asked Petr about how those literal divides symbolize the deeper traits of his characters.
These borders are between people, mental borders, physical borders, which speaks, I think, about our actual world. You know, the title of the film is We Are Never Alone, and it's mean that we live with other all the time, through others, in hate and love, in indifference too, but in the same time, you know, all these borders are omnipresent. So we are with them and we are not.
Many of your films speak to Czech society specifically. It's interesting that this film is coming along now when we've just had the election season over in the US and walls played such a huge part in all of the rhetoric coming out of that part of the world. But considering how quickly our news cycle moves around the world, it's perhaps easy to forget that not too long before that, the main news story affecting us many parts in the world was Europe's migrant crisis. It was constantly in the news, and that meant that we were very much aware of more and more borders popping up throughout Europe as well.
Well, I think that it came from the beginning. I want to always to mix intemporal, non-period themes with the actual themes. So these borders, they are in the man since long time. And don't forget that Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia was surrounded by the border. We couldn't go out. Nobody could enter on the territory. We were really surrounded by a heavy border. And now these people, they see that we have immigrants, people can come to the country. So they start to be afraid, and they are very... glad that now Serbians and or Hungarians are doing new frontiers, new borders. So the film is also about that. There was a sentence I cut for, I don't know for which reason, that this prison guard says, when they demolished our borders, you were happy, and now do you see what is it? Now we don't have borders, we are not protected. So unfortunately, now there is a lot of people in our countries who wants to make borders again. And that's what will happen also during French elections, you know. We will see if they will vote for the party who wants to have a borders again or not. So the film is not only about Czech Republic. I think that it is about, you know, general feelings in actual Europe.
Petr Vaclav, director of the Czech film We Are Not Alone. Still to come, we'll head to Argentina's most popular beach resort town. But up next, a look at Russia's rich cinematic culture. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned.
Do you like bad movies? No, neither do we. But don't worry, we've discovered a cure for bad films. It's called MUBI.
Sometimes Wells' films aren't very nourishing. They're very exciting. Citizen Kane, I think, absolutely wins the competition for the film that has made more people want to become a filmmaker than any other.
Every day, MUBI adds a new must-see film to its carefully curated selection. No junk-filled mess or endless scrolling. Just an assembly of the best movies from all over the world waiting to be devoured. To sample a whole month of movies for free, just head over to MUBI.com/monocle. That's MUBI/monocle. Hurry now, the film's about to start.
This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. I'm Ben Rylan. Despite a rich cinematic history that can boast some of the most celebrated filmmakers of all time, Russian culture often feels far away and, well, quite mysterious. Yet, unlike politics, films aren't necessarily hampered by national borders, even if the nations involved happen to be Russia and Ukraine. In a moment, we'll hear from the actress and award-winning filmmaker Dolia Gavansky. But first, Monocle contributor Maria Granina sat down with the founder of the Russian Film Week here in London, Philippe Percon, to talk about how movies bridge cultural divides.
The Russian Film Week consisted of 25 plus screenings of Russian films, including documentaries, shorts, feature films, all across London, Cambridge, at four different venues. The Regent Street Cinema was the main one. We also did a screening at the EBRD, at the Bulgari Hotel, and Cambridge University. On top of that, we had masterclasses by top Russian directors speaking to directly to the public that could come along, anyone, and learn more about Russian filmmaking from the top names. We also had a co-production day where we got industry professionals together, Russian producers, Russian directors, actors, to speak to their colleagues from Britain and Europe to work and bridge that gap and get more collaboration out of it and make more co-productions for the future so we don't isolate each other in the filmmaking process. I would very much want to see more Russian films going abroad, being distributed abroad, more foreign companies doing films in Russia and filming films in Russia. There was also a poster exhibition that we did of this whole cross-cultural idea of British posters and Russian posters and Russian films and British films and Russia and vice versa. It was a fun fair of art and culture. All the way through the week, we were 90% sold out, visited by about 5,000 people, both Russian-speaking and non-Russian-speaking. Russia has a very long history of history and culture and business and politics, and it's a very interesting place and a very interesting part of civilization, of the Slavic civilization. It has a lot of peculiarities and a lot of differences. Through film, you can consume those differences and comprehend those differences and better understand what is going on, what people are thinking, and hence why our program has been very wide, in the sense we've had historical films, we've had completely contemporary comedies about today's life, we've had films from based in times of the Soviet Union, films based in the times of the Tsar. So we've tried to do the whole thing, as well as documentaries and short films about even how the filmmakers see the future of Russia.
As you mentioned on the press conference, like one of the goals of the Russian Film Week is to build a cultural bridge. Why do you think it is kind of the right time for Russian Film Week to take place in London now?
We've had a lot of difficult moments in the last 2 to 3 years with Russia and the UK and America, politically speaking, with the sanctions and the wars, and it's been very difficult. And people have gone into their shells and not been willing to understand and talk to each other on a political and even business level. And that is why the Russian Film Week, being one of the only projects that both the British Council and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia and British businesses and Russian businesses are our sponsors, are collaborating on. And you can see that culture unites people rather than divides, like the politics of today. Through film, people can meet and understand each other better. And through film, we see how the Western world or the international world sees Russia in their own depictions of Russia. And what aspirations Russian filmmakers and the Russian film elite has to go global. That is why exactly we had the co-production day, where we wanted to bridge that gap and get people talking to each other, avoiding any political context.
So how can international filmmakers be part of this week?
Well, for next year, we want to encourage all international filmmakers that do films, that make films and film about Russia, in Russia, on Russian themes, based on Russian literature and books, or any connection with Russia, to be part of this great event and to apply for the awards, like the War and Peace BBC series that got the Golden Unicorn Award for Best Foreign Film Set in Russia, or Rengen Izdat got for Best Documentary About Russia. We encourage and want to foster and recognize those filmmakers from around the world for their work that they do on Russian-themed things, just very simply online and be entered into the contests. We really encourage and we really want an international audience and an international filmmakers to be very much part of this.
Philip Perkon there, founder of the Russian Film Week here in London. Maria also spoke to Dolia Govansky, an actress and award-winning film director and one of the key speakers at the most recent Russian Film Week here in London. They spoke about the political timing of the event and her new documentary, Golos, Ukrainian Voices.
Well, I think it's very important for Russian Film Festival to happen in London. Almost it would be strange if there is no Russian Film Festival in London, because London is first such a cosmopolitan city. Then there are so many Russians also living here, but also because, unfortunately, the current cultural climate has been quite tense between Russia and the West, and it's important to build cultural bridges and to get outside the rhetoric of division.
I remember you told me in the foyer of the Regent Cinema that films can help cultural bridges much better than the mass media or politics or anything else. Why do you think film can be a good way to build a cultural bridge?
Well, I think film is such a powerful media now. It's probably one of the most powerful ones in some ways, because if we have a hit film, oh, I don't know whether it's Trainspotting, it influences culture, it influences music, it influences the way people talk and feel, or a certain generation. So to have films that open up different stories and horizons, I think it's vital, because, you know, it has much bigger audiences than theatre, for instance. It kind of crosses over easier. But then again, we are usually used to particular genres, they cross over easier. So when it comes to films which are not Anglo-Saxon or in English language, it's harder to make that bridge. But I think it's also very important to work on that and to build on the audiences as well. I think people should see Moscow Never Sleeps by Johnny Reilly, which is an Irish director that has worked in Russia for quite a while. And it's, I think, very interesting to get a sense of somebody from the kind of outside, but who understands the inside of how they show things as well. So I think that kind of a cultural merging is always very interesting.
Dolia Govansky speaking to Maria Grinina. The final stop on our travel itinerary for today takes us to the coastal city of Mar del Plata in Argentina. The nation's most popular beach resort town lures visitors with its 10 miles of sandy beaches and what might be Latin America's biggest film festival. It's the only cinematic event in the region listed as Category A by the International Federation of Film Producers Associations. So it's up there on an elite list with the likes of Cannes and Berlin. The 31st edition in November included more than 300 films and a parallel program of talks, workshops and other activities. Monocle's Frederick Bernas was at the event and sent us this report.
One Saturday evening in November, the red carpet was rolled out for the closing ceremony of the Mar del Plata Cinema Festival. Filmmakers from around the world gathered in the Astor Piazzolla Hall to find out who would go home with the trophy. For the last 10 days, this sleepy beach town became the cinema capital of Latin America. Six venues in the city centre hosted screenings at all hours, spanning the full range of genres: documentary, drama, comedy, horror, and more. A free, open-air cinema was even set up on the beach itself, and tickets for all other festival films were on sale for just 30 pesos. That's about $2, and it's four or five times cheaper than normal prices in Argentina.
30 pesos today, it's a can of soda, maybe that.
That's Pablo Conde, one of the festival programmers.
You're not earning money with the tickets. I mean, this is for the public. And even though you have to charge something, you have to be as open as possible. And the idea is to leave no one outside of the theater.
That mentality is reflected in the diverse selection of films. Conde says the concept is that every visitor essentially creates their own festival according to personal taste, and his team's responsibility is to stay in touch with what audiences want. José Campuzano is an Argentine director who has been to Mar del Plata 9 times.
Mar del Plata is really important. The Buenos Aires Film Festival, BAFICI, used to be like an exclusive members club. It's more open now, but there is a small group of festivals which only choose films that follow certain coordinates. From what I know of the Class A festivals, Mar del Plata has a different spirit. The fact that a group of students who made a film with a reflex camera can be part of an international competition shows the way it goes here.
Another sign was the jury's decision to award the grand prize to People That Are Not Me,
the directorial debut of Hadass Ben-Arroya, a 27-year-old Israeli who also wrote her script and played the main character. José Campuzano believes that kind of progressive approach is vital in challenging established aesthetic practices to make sure the art keeps moving forward.
What is static is perverse. There are certain so-called first world festivals that don't want anything to escape their control. There is a dominant set of static values. They don't care about anything else. If cinema sticks with that system, which is great for critics but totally irrelevant to audiences, cinema will become like a museum exhibition. But it's an extremely powerful tool.
At the festival, Campuzano led a workshop on 360-degree movie production, an emerging narrative form that poses numerous questions for directors. In Buenos Aires, he runs an audiovisual collective that has made nearly 30 films in the last couple of years, many on a shoestring budget. Campuzano says the most important thing is to pick up a camera and shoot, and it looks like the national film industry has adopted a similar stance. Here's Pablo Conde.
We have received 174 features from Argentina. Out of that, we selected 64 or something like that, which means this is way better than last year. And I'm not saying that we've had worse films or not that good films in the prior years. What I'm saying is that this was a good year for Argentinian film as well as it was for Latin American films.
An impressive 43% of the festival program was made in Latin America. One of the standouts was Dark Glasses, a beautifully shot historical drama from Cuban director Jessica Rodriguez.
Yo escribo las historias y las guardo. Las escribo en realidad para que no se pierdan.
The main character is Esperanza, a blind woman whose home is invaded by Mario, a fugitive criminal with sinister intentions. She fights back using the only weapon she has, words, and tells him three stories that focus on vital moments in Cuban history. They all feature women who escape male oppression by radical means. Rodriguez loved meeting audiences in Mar del Plata. Even though her film didn't win a competition, she believes her presence was a victory for independent cinema.
Hacer cine en Cuba es difícil. Hacer cine independiente es muy difícil.
To make cinema in Cuba is difficult. To make independent cinema is extremely difficult. It's a constant struggle to fund, shoot, and present your film, so to be here is a prize for all independent filmmakers. As a female Cuban director, it's also really important, because there are so few of us. I hope this will be the tip of the iceberg and we can eventually reach the number we deserve. We should be a more equal balance. There are so many more Cuban girls who dream about doing this kind of work.
Organizers say that planning the next festival begins as soon as the red carpet is rolled up after the ceremony. But it's clear that Mar del Plata represents a lot more than the chance to walk away with a prize. The festival has become a regional summit for cinema in Latin America, a real melting pot of ideas and encounters, which will surely continue to bubble and grow in years to come. For Monocle, in Mar del Plata, Argentina, I'm Frederick Bernas.
Thank you, Frederick. Well, we'll return you now to your natural habitat. I do hope you've enjoyed our expedition around the globe. Next week, we will take an up-close look at the newspaper movie.
Don't forget Leibowitz. All the lawyers in the world aren't going to help you now. Listen, you're talking to the Morning Post.
Oh, power of the press.
From His Girl Friday to All the President's Men and Spotlight, we'll find out why newspapers continue to spark interest and intrigue on the big screen. Today's show was edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and researched by Yolene Goffin. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you happen to get your audio. The Cinema Show returns next week. I'm Ben Ryland. Thank you for listening.